Our guest today is Austin Kleon, a writer obsessed with the art of communicating through a combination of pictures and words. A while ago, he was asked to talk to students at a community college in upstate New York, so he sat down and wrote a talk based on a list of 10 things he wished he'd heard when he was starting out. The text and slides from the talk went viral, and the original blog post has now reached millions of readers everywhere. It was even celebrated by artists such as Roseanne Cash, who called the talk brilliant and real and true. I'm Jabulani LaFall, and on today's Central Standard, he'll join us to share this creative manifesto and teach us how to steal like an artist does in a world where nothing is original. Even this promo for today's show, he cribbed it off his website. That's all ahead on Central Standard after this hour's news. Good morning, Kansas City. It was Pablo Picasso who said that good artists borrow and great artists steal. Writer and artist Austin Kleon has stolen Picasso's idea and turned it into an entire creative manifesto suggesting tips on how to do just that. Steal what you like and make it your own. This is Central Standard. I'm Jabulani LaFall, and we now welcome Austin Kleon. He's the author of Steal Like an Artist, 10 Things Nobody Told You About Being Creative. He said to it, TED Talk today, immediately after the show over at the Nelson Atkins Museum. If you want to check that out, welcome to the show, Austin.
Thanks for having me.
Now, what made you want to do this book?
This book really came out of necessity. I was asked to give a presentation to some college students in upstate New York, and I was terrified of talking to students that age about what they should be doing with their lives. And so I went for a walk with my wife, and I asked her advice, and she said, well, the best talk I ever heard was in high school. This lady came in and she literally just had a list of things that she wished she had heard when she was in high school. So I thought that was a great idea and worth stealing. So I went back to my office and I wrote a list of 10 things that I wish I'd heard when I was first starting out. And when I gave the talk, it went over well. But when I came back to Texas, where I live, I decided to post the text and pictures from my blog, speech on my blog, and it went viral online, as they say, in a way that nothing I'd ever done before did. And pretty soon, the people I know that followed me said this should be a book, and that's really how it got started.
So totally unplanned.
Yeah, I mean, it was completely, it was completely like they say, necessity is the mother of invention. You know, I needed something to say, so I had to come up with something.
That's a famous quote, and your book is full of quotes. You're sort of a quote collector, aren't you?
I am. I'm a big quote collector, and part of the first point in the book, Steal Like an Artist, came from my collecting quotes from famous artists, and I was just struck by how many artists use the word steal.
And so artists do tend to steal, based on your observations.
On my experience, from my experience, nothing in creative work is completely original. All creative work builds off what came before, and most artists and creative people in general are brought to their fields by what they love. You know, like if you do radio, you loved radio, you know, so and you're brought to your form based on your love for the form. And so you can't help but be influenced. And so the best thing that I've found for artists is to embrace influence instead of running away from it.
Who did you steal from, Austin?
Oh, I steal from everybody. For this book, I stole from Picasso, and I stole from my own mother.
What did you take from dear old mom?
My mother used to have this saying called "garbage in and garbage out," and I hated that phrase when I was growing up. But now I know what it means. It means that you're only going to be as good as the stuff you surround yourself with. And in creative work, that means picking and choosing your influences.
You say in your book that we learn by copying, and even have a chapter devoted to such a subject, copying. What is the difference, Austin, between copying and stealing?
Yeah. So copying is for the apprentice phase of creative work. copying is when you learn your trade. I mean, we learn how to write by copying the alphabet. We learn how to play music by copying scales. And when we're learning how to do our work, we learn to do by emulating the people who came before us. So copying is about learning the moves. Like, for instance, the basketball player Kobe Bryant.
He has a quote in the book.
I do. I have a quote from Kobe in the book. Kobe's an interesting player because he's one of the first people in that generation who had VHS tapes. So he could watch players who came before him. He could watch these clip reels and analyze their moves. And then he could try it out on the court and try to copy them. Now, the difference between copying and stealing comes up here because what Kobe found out is that he didn't have the same body type as a lot of the players he was trying to emulate. So he had to transform their moves into something that worked for his own body. And so what stealing like an artist is exactly what Kobe did. You lift moves or inspiration from other creative people. And I include sports and creativity. So you take stuff from other people, but then you weave it into your own work. You transform it into your own thing, something new that we haven't seen before.
Give us an example of something you copied that became full-fledged theft.
So when I was, it happens a lot, like with my visual art when I'm drawing. There's a great quote from the comics artist Jack Kirby, and he says, "If a man draws hands that you like, steal those hands." And so when I'm cartooning, a lot of what I'm doing is I'll steal hands from like a certain artist. Or, like, I really love the way Saul Steinberg draws noses, so I'll draw noses like Saul Steinberg, but then I'll draw trees like Charles Schultz or something like that. And what happens when you copy your heroes that way is you sort of have this Frankenstein monster. You know, you can see the seams, you can see the stitches in the pieces you've put together. Now, what happens is after you get about, you know, 6 to 8 or even a dozen or even 2 dozen influences, they start to become human, like they start to mesh into their own thing where you can't see the seams anymore. And once the Frankenstein monster becomes like a full-fledged human being, that's when you know you've discovered your voice, as they say.
There's an interesting point you have in the book. If you choose one person to steal from, that's bad theft. That's
right.
Theft in a bad way.
Yeah.
But if you steal from everybody, that's the goal.
That's the goal, yeah. There's a very famous quote, steal from one, it's plagiarism. Steal from many, it's research. I once heard the cartoonist Gary Panner, he said, if you rip off just one person, you're going to be a ripoff. If you rip off 100 people, you're going to be a genius.
Is that his voice?
I don't know. I forget what Gary's kind of an old hippie, so he probably talk, you know. No, but
right, no, you're not going to go there.
No, I'm not going to go there.
How do you, Austin, choose what to steal?
That's a really great question. You know, I came up with something. It's funny because I'm a big Twitter fan, so a lot of times I'll come up with ideas and I'll tweet them immediately and then I'll figure out what they mean later. But today I tweeted something. When you have that moment when you say, man, I should have thought of that.
Right.
Or, man,
but
I wish
didn't.
I had done that, but you didn't. That's something worth stealing. That's a really good gut check for something worth stealing. But I usually – the method I usually – first of all, I think it's important for creative people to be collectors, not hoarders. And what I mean by that is hoarders collect they collect without discrimination, indiscriminately. And a collector collects selectively, only collects things that they really love. So I think I think the best things to steal are the things that really resonate with you. And that could be a sign on a parking garage. That could be something someone said in conversation. It could be a cloud floating in the sky. You know, anything in the world is up for grabs. But usually what I advocate to young creators who aren't sure what their voice is yet, is I say, identify one thinker that really blows your mind. Like, identify one person that, whose work just sets you on fire, and then completely saturate yourself with their work. And then once you have their work under your belt, so to speak, find three thinkers that influence them and go back in the chain and completely saturate yourself with their work. And what if you keep continuing that process over time, what you'll have done is you'll have built a family tree of creative thinkers, and you'll have this kind of creative lineage from which you can draw from.
You're listening to Central Standard on 89.3 KCUR, streaming live on KCUR.org. I'm your host, Jabalani LaFall. Austin Kleon is our guest live here in the studio. He's teaching us artistic larceny, as it were. He's the author of Steal Like an Artist, 10 Things Nobody Told You About Being Creative. Kansas City, what artist, writer, business person, educator, peer, parent, family member have you stolen from? We're talking ideas, quotations, methods. Who did you steal from and how did you use it? Give us a call at 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888, or shoot us an email at centralstandard@kcur.org. We're looking for admitted creative thieves. 816-235-2888 is the number. You talked about finding an artist or finding a thinker that influences you and then going back and finding a person that influenced them. I'm thinking particularly of Henry David Thoreau and Ralph Waldo Emerson and that right. sort of chain. This is sort of a genealogy of ideas.
Yes.
Which you present in your book.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about that.
Yeah, I mean, I always say that you know, you have a mother and you have a father, and you are a remix of their DNA, or you're a remix of your ancestors and your mother and father, and that's what makes up your familial genealogy. But just as we have a familial genealogy, we also have a genealogy of ideas. Now, what's great about our genealogy of ideas is you don't get to pick your family, but you can pick your teachers, you can pick the music you listen to, you can pick the books you read, you can pick where you live, you can pick your friends. And that's, you know, Jay-Z has a really great quote in his book Decoded, and it goes something like, Jay-Z was talking about, you know, we were kids without fathers, and so he was talking about they found their fathers on wax, on vinyl records, in the music that their parents listened to and the music they came across. And Jay-Z talks about how they built their own, you know, genealogy of ideas. And what's fascinating to me about that is, in the absence of genealogy, in a way, he and his peers created their own.
And who is in your artistic family tree?
The creator I feel closest to is a gal named a lady named Linda Berry. She's a terrific cartoonist and writer, and I met her back in 2006, and I spent about 2 hours with her in a bar after she gave a reading. And if anyone's ever met Linda Berry, they know that 2 hours is more than enough to run a career off of. But you know, my other influences, I love Kurt Vonnegut. I love Charles Schulz, who drew Peanuts. I love Saul Steinberg. You know, pretty much if you're from the Midwest and you have a sense of humor and you use pictures and words in your work, I've probably stolen something from you.
Or you're going to steal.
Or I'm going to steal from them, yeah.
We have Austin Kleon, the author of Steal Like an Artist, talking artistic larceny. We'd like to know who you stole from, or if you know somebody who stole something from somebody, an idea, a method, or a process, be it artistic or be it something having to do with the business world or the oratorical repertoire. Patty is inspired by artist Alan Shields. A big painting of his hung at the Nelson Atkins when Patty was growing up, and by Persian miniaturists from the 1200s. No particular person, but Persian miniaturists.
Sure.
That's who she's inspired by and what she takes from. We got Josh in Lawrence as well. Welcome to Central Standard.
Hey, thanks.
All right. Who are you stealing from? Who have you observed stealing?
Well, I'm a pastor at Plymouth Congregational Church, and I regularly steal for my sermons from the great C.L. Franklin. Some people might know as Aretha Franklin's dad, but he kind of pioneered the style of hooping, which is where you kind of understate things and growl. And wait for the crowd and kind of rhythmic style way of delivering speech. And then also from Bill Hicks, the great comedian.
Those are two amazing influences to juxtapose.
And good examples. What made you want to take those particular attributes, Josh?
Well, I don't think I'd preach if it wasn't for T.L. Franklin. And, like, I'm a white guy and not from that tradition, so it's kind of hard to pull off in a way. So, but I couldn't do it if I didn't love it, and he made me love it. So it is what it is. And Bill Hicks, he just got hilariously biting commentary. And I can tell if I use anything near an actual line of his, like, people will repeat it to me right away. They'll be like, oh, that line. I'm like, yeah.
I want to hear your sermons.
Yeah, in that sense,
I'm so fascinated by this.
Certainly. In that sense, Josh, it sounds like you're definitely making it your own because there's a certain showmanship with African-American pastors that stands out.
So. Yeah, and it's interesting because sermons and creative theft have a long history. You know, there's a lot of people who have accused Martin Luther King of plagiarism. But he really came out of that tradition that you're talking about where you borrowed from different sermons and you, you know, remixed sermons into your own work. And he was a terrific thief and obviously made it his own.
Certainly. Thank you for calling in, Josh. We have John in Turner. Welcome to Central Standard, John.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I get a lot of inspiration from Winston Hubert McIntosh. You heard of that guy?
Yes, Peter Tosh.
Yeah, well, very few Americans of any stripe probably know who the man was. But
Right.
Yeah, 25. He died September 11th, 1987, by the way.
And what do you get from Peter Tosh?
Just the great wordplay that he used, like lawyers are liars and the grudge is the judge and the crime minister. You get the picture.
I certainly do. Thank you, John.
Brilliant. Yeah.
Thank you, John, for contributing to this conversation about artistic theft, creative larceny, whatever you want to call it. 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. We want to know, who did you steal from and how did you use it? Give us a call. You can also hit us at email at centralstandard@kcur.org. Beth wrote us to share. She steals inspiration from fortune cookies. She says she's had this fortune cookie taped up in her cubicle for several years. If you continually give, you will continually have. So talk about stealing ideas versus stealing methods.
Oh, that's a great question. Well, I think I think that when you're stealing from when you're stealing inspiration, this isn't completely on that point, but I think that there's, you know, when you're an artist, you want to see like your heroes. You don't want to look like your heroes. And what that means is that, you know, you want to be able – the reason that you copy your heroes, the real reason that you try to reverse engineer their work is you want to try to see the world through their eyes. Because if you simply steal the style of someone's work, you're just skimming the surface. Like you're skimming the surface of what they did. But if you go deeper, if you research them, if you figure out where they were coming from, that's a much richer thing to steal for your own work, and it's much more easier to then transform that into your own experience.
So then how do ideas evolve?
I think ideas evolve just like everything else on this planet evolves, is that they collide. You know, they come into contact with each other. And our goal as our job as creative people, it's just like the caller before. He loves Bill Hicks and he loved the preacher Franklin. And those are two completely diverse influences. And so that caller is right in the middle. If those two are a Venn diagram, he's in the middle now. He's united those two where they might have not been united before.
Justin in Kansas City. Welcome to Central Standard. Who did you steal from, Justin?
Yes, I'm a student at the Art Institutes International KC. I'm a culinary student. I believe this ties in some with like recipes.
Absolutely.
You know, you look at other recipes and kind of leech onto them about what they're starting with, and you can always change ideas, ingredients, and cooking methods and kind of make it your own.
Certainly.
Absolutely. And I consider cooking to be a very creative endeavor. You know, it's interesting when people say, oh, I'm not creative. I say, well, have you ever cooked a meal before? You know, so, yeah, that's very fascinating.
Thank you, Justin, for contributing to the conversation on idea theft, creative larceny. What's an idea income, Austin Kleon?
So there's this economic theory out there that you're only going if you take your five closest friends and you take their incomes, their financial incomes, and you average them together, the result is going to be pretty close to your income. Well, I think the same is true of our idea incomes. I think we're literally the sum of our surroundings. And so Questlove, the Roots drummer, he has a great quote. He says, the only people I'll let in my crew are the people I can learn from. And so I think in our lives, it's very much our responsibility if we want to get better, you basically surround yourself with the best.
Is everyone creative?
I think absolutely everyone has the potential to be creative. I think I think human beings, what makes us human is our potential for creativity. I think that what happens is that in our culture, creativity is kind of presented as this magic that, like, a lightning bolt comes out of the sky and strikes you, or you somehow you're somehow a very special person and you reach down deep into your soul and pull creativity out of it. But I think that, in my experience, creativity is a kind of magic, but unlike at Hogwarts, any muggle can learn to use it.
Adam in KC, welcome to Central Standard.
Thanks for having me on, Jablani. I think my background is perfectly suited to this, and I can't wait to go out and buy this book like this afternoon. In college, I was a painter, and I still do, and would combine things like Lucian Freud with Piet Mondrian, and things that wouldn't often go together. And today, I own a graphic design and marketing company called Voss Visuals, and so we don't, for every client, we don't have the ability to take original photographs and go out and create stuff. So we have, there's websites out there that I'm sure most are familiar with, like Shutterstock, where we pay a monthly fee to have the right to download certain images. And oftentimes it's that collaboration of seeing other artists' photographs and graphic design that allows us to go, oh, that's perfect for that client. And we'll take three or four things and combine them into a brochure or a catalog or a vehicle wrap. And if it weren't for that giant collection of millions of other images from other artists, we wouldn't be able to come up with the work that we do for clients in the time and budget that we do.
Well, thank you, Adam, for contributing to the conversation on creative stealing. And speaking of which, you suggest that one should Google everything.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. Like, people have asked me about I think that people have asked me my stance on, like, digital versus analog and how I feel about that. Now, Googling is this tool. It's almost like an oracle. Like, I ask Google everything. I Google my problems. I Google my dreams. But Google everything is really about, if you're a creative person or if you want to be creative, if you only take things at the surface, if you only take information at the surface, like whatever the blogs are talking about that day or whatever the paper is talking about, you're only going to get that surface that everyone has. But if you spend like 5 to 10 minutes just doing a little bit of research or searching on Google and going a little bit deeper on the subject, you're going to have access to things that no one else has access to, because no one's taken the time and the energy to really dive deep into these subjects.
And they're not you.
And they're not you, so they don't have the same questions. They don't have the same background. So everyone's questions are based on where they're coming from. So, yeah, I think Google everything is really one of my mantras.
On Twitter, and our Twitter handle, by the way, is at KCURCST. On Twitter, at Sculptor KC writes that he stole from Da Vinci. The quote in particular is, "The supreme misfortune is when theory outstrips performance." That's from Da Vinci, and Sculptor KC writes about that. What do you think about that quote? "The supreme misfortune is when theory outstrips performance."
Well, first, I think it was Woody Allen that said, if you're going to steal from the best. And Da Vinci was certainly one of the best. The theory, when theory outstrips performance, is practicing what you're preaching. you know, one of the things that is special to me about my book is that, you know, every book is special to the author that wrote it. That's kind of a silly thing to say, but all these things are things that are completely that I've come to through my failures to try to be an artist. You know, I mean, all this stuff is comes out of my own practice. And so I like it a lot of time. I think theory and practice go, it's in a big cycle. You know, you have a little bit of theory and then you test it out in your practice and then you have to go back to some theory or practice leads to the theory. So that's a great quote.
We're talking about creative theft on today's Central Standard, a stolen radio show, if you will. Rebecca in KC, welcome to Central Standard.
Hi.
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 My latest addiction to stealing is Pinterest.
Yeah.
Anything that I want to do this last weekend, I wanted to make a birdhouse out of recycled or, you know, upcycled things and Google it or go to Pinterest and type in upcycle or recycle birdhouses and get ideas. And I don't feel like I'm creative myself, but I can absolutely copy somebody else's great idea.
Thank you, Rebecca, for talking about that. Talk about Pinterest, the latest social media craze. It literally commands you to re-pin. It encourages stealing, as you are.
Yeah, I mean, Pinterest is really interesting because you notice the caller was a woman. You know, I think that Pinterest right now has this bad a reputation for only being for females. I love Pinterest.
Yeah, I'm on it tough.
Yeah, I was. I think that any men who aren't on Pinterest are really missing out. I think what Pinterest is this very like, you know, people have kept cork boards forever, you know, inspiration boards and, you know, scrapbooks and that kind of thing. What's amazing about Pinterest is that you can literally go on someone's Pinterest board and almost see their – well, first of all, you can see their taste, which is a huge part of what makes someone, you know, their creative personality. But second, you just have this access to things that people – you know, you just have this great – idea repository, you know, and what she said about being able to search Pinterest, that's what's so special about Pinterest and the other services is you can tag things with certain information. And there, the lovely thing about the internet is no matter how esoteric your tastes are, you're going to find someone else or a community of people that also share those tastes.
Kim in Prairie Village writes, to get accepted to the Kansas City Art Institute, I stole the way my grandmother painted shadows. At my first interview, I was told to make a new portfolio and come back. I researched my grandmother's paintings and stole her paint thickness, color blending, and brush strokes. Some of it I used in paintings, and some of the information I transferred to pencil drawings. Now I teach yoga and steal verbiage, descriptions, moves from other teachers, books, and my own students. Kim is a thief after your own heart, Austin Kleon.
She's definitely a thief after my own heart. And how interesting that her creative theft overlaps with her familial theft.
Our guest is Austin Kleon, live here in the studio. He's the author of Steal Like an Artist, 10 Things Nobody Told You About Being Creative. Meanwhile, Kansas City, what artist, writer, mentor, friend, family member, business person, or educator have you stolen from over the years? We're talking ideas, quotations, methods, processes. Who did you steal from and how did you use it? Give us a call at 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. While we take a break, think about what you've stolen and call in and share it with us also at centralstandard@kcur.org. We'll be right back. And welcome back to Central Standard. I'm Jabalani LaFall. Our guest today says there's no such thing as what's bad and what's good, only what's worth stealing. And joining us once again for the second part of the hour is Austin Kleon. He's the author of Steal Like an Artist, 10 Things Nobody Told You About Being Creative. Kansas City, what artist, writer, mentor, friend, family member, business person, educator, lover have you stolen from? We're talking ideas, quotations, methods, processes, anything that could be stolen. Who did you steal from and how did you use it? Give us a call at 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. 88. You can also shoot us an email at centralstandard@kcur.org. We're going to go to KC in Lenexa. Welcome to Central Standard.
Good morning, everybody. How you doing?
Good morning.
Good.
Well, ironically, you're speaking in my language in that I've been a DJ for house music and rave parties, what have you, for over 15 years. I had the fortune to go to college in New York City in the early 90s when that style of music was just hitting the city proper, mm-hmm. and I was exposed to this wonderful array of music. And it's sad because, you know, DJs, as they are projected in the media and depicted as such, I find it's kind of like an afterthought, a byproduct of something else going on. And I find that as a DJ myself, I think I show a little more thoughtfulness in what I do. You know, it's my goal to basically take music made by other people, right? Taking those songs, but my challenge to myself is, how do I make it better? You know, there's been times in the DJ world where maybe a certain song is released, and every DJ on the frickin' planet has a copy of that thing. But right. My goal is to take that song and make it my own. How can I put that stamp of the KC3PO, which is my DJ name, put that stamp on there, see how I can make that unique to myself? And I've really gotten some good street cred from that because of the fact that people, I find that the DJ sets I create are more memorable because I put that thought into it. So I thought I might share this, the idea of just, you know, music as a medium. And, hey, think of those mixtapes we used to make back in the 80s for loved ones and such. You know what I'm talking about? You know what's going on. So what a wonderful way to express that, taking music to exude mood and such and what have you. So, yeah.
Thank you, KC-3PO, lifting that directly from Star Wars. A great example of artistic theft there. Thank you for calling in, KC. Lisa says that perhaps rather than calling ourselves thieves, we could refer to ourselves as students. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I think that's all right. I think that students have to be thieves, though. That's a big part of being a student. You know, I wanted to go back to the DJ thing because there's actually DJ Spooky has a really great line, and he says, "You're only as good as your record collection." And that's that whole garbage in, garbage out thing that my mom was talking about before.
And speaking of garbage in, garbage out, one of the great examples of your own artistic theft, as it were, was your first book, Newspaper Blackout, stealing words from newspapers that were just sitting around, making the concepts your own by simply subtracting what you didn't want to use and using it. Tell us about that and how it fits into your still as an artist platform.
So Newspaper Blackout started when I was right out of college. I had a horrible case of writer's block. And one day when I was looking at the Microsoft Word screen, the little cursor taunting me, I looked over at the recycle bin and saw this big stack of newspapers. And I thought, well, I don't have any words, but right next to me are thousands of them. I figured I'd steal some. So I picked up a drawing marker that I draw with. And I started circling words and trying to turn them into these kind of unique combinations, sentences, phrases. And then I blacked out what I didn't need word-wise. And they look like the poems, if you haven't seen them, they look like if the CIA did haikus. They look like redacted government documents.
CIA haiku.
Yeah, CIA haiku is what it looked like. But the thing I found that was really interesting is by stealing words – from other writers, it's really not any different than if you were thinking about writing normally, like just typing things out of your head or writing longhand. You know words because you've read words, and that's how you keep a repository of words in your head from the things that you've read. So it's a lot of the same thing. And doing the blackouts has taught me a lot about writing in general. But the strange thing I found is that by stealing other people's words, I actually came up with poetry that I felt like was more from my perspective. Like I found that my poetry got better when I started lifting words from other people, because what I am is I'm the filter. I'm the one that subtracts the words and I get to say what words go and what stay.
We're talking about the concept of stealing like an artist with the author of a book, Steal Like an Artist, Austin Kleon. Steal Like an Artist, 10 Things Nobody Told You About Being Creative. We're also asking you to call in and tell us what you stole and how you used it. 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. 2888. You can also write into us at centralstandard@kcur.org, like Max did. Max says, I'm a photographer, and like many said, I use the internet to steal creative ideas before I do my shots. However, the more I saw what people have already done, the more I felt burnt out because I saw how many creative ideas, methods, techniques were already done before me. That goes back to that idea of nothing being new under the sun, straight out of Ecclesiastes.
That's right. And Ecclesiastes lifted it from a bunch of ancient Egyptians. So,
right.
Martha Stewart, it seems a strange creative influence, but she has been an influence on me. And she had this great quote when I saw her at a conference. She said, I look at everything that's out there and I look for the void. She looks for the empty space, like what hasn't been done. And in a way, that's how she's influenced. She completely saturates herself with what's out there, but by doing that, she knows where the space is that she can fill. And I think when you're like young and starting out, or even when you're older and you're trying to do your own thing, again, it comes back to this thing. I don't want to be influenced. You know, oh, I don't want to copy someone else. Well, but part of the process can be, you know, surveying the field, so to speak, and then finding your own spot.
You say it's important to keep track of things, ideas, or processes you plan to steal. What is the swipe file?
So the swipe file is just what it sounds like. It's an organizational system for the things that you've stolen. And it can be anything from an actual manila folder that you collect, like photocopies and printouts. It can be your Pinterest board, as we talked about before. It can be an actual cork board in your office. Or it can even be, you know, we carry around copy machines in our pockets. Our cell phones can take pictures, video, photographs. But your swipe file is the place that you put the things that you've stolen so you can get at them easily and then use it in your own work. Newspaper reporters call it a morgue file. And I actually like that name even better because your morgue file is where you put the dead things that you're later going to reanimate in your work.
Or maybe perhaps do an autopsy.
That's right.
What about the cases where people find themselves creating almost a direct copy of something inadvertently, the sort of subconscious thing you ingest?
Yeah.
Mixed with the concept of great minds thinking alike, and you don't realize somebody already did this.
Yeah, there is such a thing as arriving. You know, there's a couple of things. First of all, when people do work and they put it out in the world, you get the influence whether it's direct or not, because someone might do work 50 years ago that just makes its way into the popular culture, and that's how you kind of absorb it. There's also places in which people come to the same kind of creative solutions at the same time. I think what happens, if I can go back to the basketball metaphor, if you steal someone's move and it's working well for you, it'll work for a while. But what happens is eventually the defenders in the game get good enough that they know your moves. So you have to push yourself forward and come up with new moves. So what happens when you find that you've copied someone else, it's kind of the same thing. It's time for you to up your game. It's time to transform your work into something else that hasn't been seen before.
Does this connect with the other idea of starting out phony until you become real?
Yeah, I think we're a culture that's obsessed with authenticity. I'm not real sure what authenticity has to do with creative work, honestly. I've kind of gone down that road. I think that just as we invent new work for ourselves, I think we also invent ourselves, and that's part of the creative process. When you're younger, how do you decide how to dress? Well, you know, you emulate the people you see that you think look cool, you know, and it's as simple as that. You model your life off of the people that you resonate with. And part of the wonder of being alive right now, and being specifically, it's kind of built into the American dream, is like you can become whoever you want to be.
We're talking about inspiration, learning, stealing, and all three with Austin Kleon, the author of Still Like an Artist, 10 Things Nobody Told You About Being Creative. We're also been getting a lot of cool comments about people's confessions about creative theft. We're going to go to Cynthia in Prairie Village, Central Standard. Welcome.
Yes, good morning. I was curious about the other side of the coin. How do you protect your ideas? One idea I heard was that the creative partner with Ron Howard, the director, I forgot his name, but he said he learned from Orson Welles that you put an idea, write it out on paper, then you mail it to yourself, registered mail. therefore your documentation of the date and time your idea was created. Are there any other ideas one can use to maybe protect one's creation?
Get a good lawyer. you know, legally, when you create something, you already have the copyright on it. But legal issues are a whole different can of worms. The best advice is if you do something creative, get a good lawyer. But also, I tend to, you know, there's a lot of young artists out there that say, I don't want to put my stuff online because I don't want someone to steal it. There's a great quote from Howard Aiken. He says, don't worry about people stealing your ideas. If your ideas are any good, you're going to have to shove them down people's throats.
Well, right. Thank you, Cynthia.
Thank you.
Thank you, Cynthia, for writing. And we had a patent lawyer on, by the way, that said that's one of the biggest misnomers or myths to mail something to yourself.
Yeah.
It doesn't work. It doesn't stand up.
No, it doesn't.
So. Sorry about that. Susan in Overland
Hello?
Park. Welcome to Central
Hi.
Standard.
I'm an art licensing agent here in Kansas City. I've been licensing artists' work for 20 years, and when you asked what people stole from or stole from someone else, I stole a person. One of the five top artists in this country, his agent is a good friend of mine, and just this year I was able to steal her away from him, so now she works with me.
Ouch.
Wow. Stole an actual person.
Yep. And to answer a question that the woman brought up before, if you do not register a copyright on your artwork and you find that it has been infringed, if you take it to court without a registration prior to infringement, you won't get court costs or your attorney fees if you win,
wow.
which are substantial. I've been through that before. It's very substantial.
Do you encounter creative theft a lot, Susan?
Yes, more often than not. In fact, I rep an artist who has passed, but when she was in her prime, I would have to go up to people, my fellow artists and agents, and one of them I had to confront her and tell her if she didn't stop ripping my artist off, I was going to have to take legal action against her.
Well, thank you very much for contributing to the conversation. Susan, you're listening to Central Standard on 89.3 KCUR, streaming live on KCUR.org. I'm your host, Jabalani LaFall. Our guest is Austin Kleon. He's the author of Steal Like an Artist, 10 Things Nobody Told You About Being Creative. Kansas City, what artist, writer, mentor, friend, family member, business person, or educator have you stolen from? Ideas, quotations, methods, processes. Give us a call at 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. You can also write in at centralstandard@kcur.org. The conversation flow, Austin, has kind of shifted to intellectual property and how to protect yourself a little bit. So let's re-clarify. You say there are good examples of good theft versus bad theft. Give us a couple more examples.
Well, in general, intellectual property as a whole and copyright law is a big bag of worms, and people have written about it way more smarter and more brilliantly than I could ever do it. One of the things that I've found in my own practice is that legal constraints lead to artistic constraints. And what that means is the more you follow what's legal in a lot of cases, the better your creative theft gets. So for instance, when I'm making one of my newspaper blackout poems, if I kept 75% of the words of the article, not only would it be more on the side of copyright infringement, it also wouldn't be very good.
Right.
So the more I cut away from the article, the more there's a couple of things. My poems float under the murky waters of fair use. And one of the things that fair use says is that it has to be transformative. So, for instance, like me taking a journalistic nonfiction article and turning it into a piece of poetry, that's transformative. It has to be the amount of work you take. So I only take a few words out of like hundreds and so forth. So one of the things that I think is really fascinating as an artist is you can take your legal constraints and turn them into artistic constraints to make better work.
Talk about the concept of how important it is to look willingly stupid, even as you steal.
Oh, yeah. A willingness to look stupid is one of my, I think, definitely one of my best traits and something that served me well in my career. I mean, if you make a true creative leap, you have to really be willing to make that leap and to kind of go out on a limb, so to speak. And I think failure is just a huge part of the creative process. And I think that you have to be willing to fail. You have to be willing to look stupid in front of people, because that's the only way you're going to get better.
And willing to steal.
And willing to steal.
Which is the subject of what we're talking about today. Steal Like an Artist, that's the book. 10 Things Nobody Told You About Being Creative. We're on with Austin Kleon. We're also asking you, Kansas City, what have you stolen? Why and how did you use it? Teresa in Ottawa, welcome to Central Standard.
Hi, thank you. Good morning.
Right.
What I would like to share is, as a young student in a band, starting in the sixth grade, through senior year of high school, I would say that our band director and his artistic musical talent was so influential on me. But what I really took away from him and stole from him was his work ethic and the fact that you have to work very hard to be successful at what you want to do.
Thank you very much, Teresa, for your contribution to the conversation. On Facebook, Colby writes, I think appropriation is a better word of phrasing it. We've been talking about stealing the whole hour. Colby says, I'm an artist, and that is a necessary part of the working process, pulling from sources and integrating it back into established criteria for the individual process. It's fun.
Yep.
Why are calendars and logbooks important in the creative theft process? Austin.
So a lot of times when people talk about not getting the creative work done that they want to get done, time is their big factor. People are busy. They have families. They have day jobs. And what I found is that to be a successful artist, you either have to drop everything in your life and go completely gung-ho on what you're working on. I've never done that. It's never been an option for me. I like my family. I like my life, and I like being comfortable. So the other side of that is time management. And so what calendars do for your creative work is, when you have a project you're working on, simply having a daily routine can be a lot more helpful than having lots of time in a consecutively to work. And what that an illustration of that is, if you get up every morning and you write a page of text, say you're a novelist, it doesn't seem like much. You wrote a page that day. Big deal. You do it for 365 days in a year, and you've got enough for a novel. And so what I recommend to people is they get a calendar, and they break whatever creative project they're trying to do into daily chunks that they can handle. Like, I wrote my first book on the commute to and from work, and then on my lunch break. And I had very specific things that I could do in those time periods. And I think that's the first step towards carving out time to be creative in your life.
Priscilla writes into us at centralstandard@kcur.org. As a professional storyteller, I tell stories that come from everywhere, folk tales, my own life, and stories from books. We all start by imitation as we figure out our own true voices. What do you think about that, the phrase, your own true voice? Does that actually exist?
The best description of voice, which voice gave me real issues when I was school. I never knew what the heck people were talking about when they said, find your voice. The best description came from the poet Billy Collins. And he said, your voice is really when you've been copying six to eight different poets. And like we said before, the Frankenstein monster becomes human and you don't see the seams anymore. You can't identify any of those individual people. They've almost become a gumbo.
Right.
You know, all the ingredients have turned into the main dish.
Kenneth in Overland Park, welcome to Central Standard.
Hello. This is not exactly what you're talking about, I think, as far as being creative, but I work for a large railroad, and we're contract union employees, and other times people will interpret the contract, which is very large, a certain way, a certain new way, and get very creative, even on another railroad, and we steal that idea and start implementing it in our contract. And is that actually made it to where during arbitration the contract has changed.
I love that.
Thank you, Ken. But this is about stealing ideas. We're not necessarily talking about painting or literature.
Yeah,
this is about stealing of ideas.
This is about life and how life and us as humans and how we evolve. So I think that's a brilliant example. I love that.
Marcus writes that he keeps a file on his computer titled Dream Book. In it, he saves photos from everything from beautiful places that he wants to visit and appealing decor from a room, breathtaking architecture, etc., for a future dream home. That's what Marcus writes in at centralstandard@kcur.org, talking about stealing creatively and inspiration. What do you mean, Austin, when you say be boring?
Be boring. Creative people hate this advice. They think, you know, there's this idea that creative people are these wild, on fire kind of, you know, beatnik, renegade, rogue people. There's a great Gustave Flaubert quote, and he says, "I try to be boring and normal in my everyday life so that I can be violent and original in my work." And what he meant by that was, creative work takes a lot of energy to accomplish, and you don't have that energy if you waste it on other things.
Julie in KC writes, "Interesting to think about this idea of how an idea of itself is derivative. Roland Barthes in the 60s wrote that the death of the author, noting that we are also influenced by our histories and environments, that it's actually impossible for anyone to be a single creator of anything. The whole idea of intellectual property seems a problem in this light of that. Everything we do becomes a part of the Creative Commons. It's the individual's transformation of source material that matters, and I think you've established that here in this hour. Austin, what's next in the life of an artistic thief for you? You got this TED Talk coming up right after this broadcast. What's next after that?
I am promoting this book for two months. We're going all over the country. And then it's time for me to figure out what's next. I'm not real sure what's next. I'm really into marriage. So I'm thinking about doing a book on creativity and marriage, but we'll see how that turns out.
Looking forward to see what you steal next, Austin.
All right.
Austin Kleon is the author of Steal Like an Artist, 10 Things Nobody Told You About Being Creative. Thank you for coming.
Thanks for having me.
And tune in tomorrow for the Walt Bodine Show as the food critics set the table for a discussion on culinary delights. This week's topic, sandwiches. Our show is produced by Andrea Salenzi, executive produced by Bill Anderson. We have help from Charlie Upchurch. Kim Noble is our announcer, and Emily Muter manages our website. Central Standard's intro theme music is by Miles Bonney. What you're hearing now, the outro by The Will Knots. Up to Date is next with Justin Wolf discussing artist Thomas Hart Benton, plus the weekend to-do list. I'm Jabalani LaFall. This is Central Standard. Enjoy your day.